This is WJBC This Week.
You can't find someone who thinks we deserve a pay raise. Even my wife, you know, says, nope, the job's not done.
There's a lot of folks who just want to raise taxes. I understand that. That's an easier way out than taking on some special interest groups.
I want to apologize to the Redbird family and University of Illinois State for my mistake.
He's done everything they've asked. He's done everything the university asked.
Write my name on your ballot. I'm up with Barack Obama.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stahl. On this week's program, Bloomington's Parks and Recreations Director discusses ways the city is looking to save money in its park facilities and offerings. Illinois' comptroller comes to town to explain what it will take for social service agencies to get paid. A write-in candidate for Congress explains why he thinks it's time for an independent voice in Washington. Former Central Catholic and Illinois State standout Chris Hyland competes for a job in the NFL, as does another former Redbird, Cameron Meredith, who is working out with the Chicago Bears. Plus, WJBC's Throwback Thursday guest, former sportscaster Tommy Hodson. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Jay Tetzloff was promoted recently from his position as Miller Park Zoo Director to Director of Bloomington Parks and Recreation, while he still oversees day-to-day operations at the zoo. It was done as a cost-saving measure, as the city is facing a $4 million structural deficit. Parks appears to be one area city leaders are targeting as they try to plug a shortfall. And Tetzloff talked with WJBC's Susan Saunders this week.
Where are we at, like, in the parks department, the actual parks itself? Mm-hmm. Is there any more that we can cut there?
One of the options that's been thrown out there is to cut about $150,000 out of our seasonal salaries. But the majority of those guys are the ones who are doing the mowing and the maintaining of our the bathrooms and mowing. Most of those guys are mowing. So losing those, we'll mow. Right now we get to every park in about a 7-day cycle. So not every week, but almost every week we get to every park. If we cut $150,000 from this line item, then we're mowing them about we're getting everyone in 3 weeks.
Ooh, that's some long grass.
So if you're trying to play soccer and the grass is a little long, you know, all we can do is we're sorry. We don't have any funding to have people on mowers. It's it's not something we want. We take a lot of pride.
Or part-time
those
employees?
Are all seasonals. Those are just college kids or people who work for us. Just it's not full time. They usually have 2 to 3 or 4 months off during the winter. But those are the guys that we have out maintaining our parks, and those guys take a lot of pride in their parks. And to drive by a park and go, well, I'll get to you next week, that's hard for them, too.
I'm guessing some of those projected parks in certain neighborhoods around the city aren't going to be built anytime soon. But what about closing of parks? Does that ever happen?
Boy, that's something I don't ever read about. I'm new to my position, so I'm still learning a lot about how this whole operation runs.
I admit that's a horrible idea, but I'm just curious, you know, how that even happens. Do we just take down the swing sets and say this is no longer our
place? Well, you'd sell the land, most likely, and allow someone else to take it over and do whatever they wanted with it. One of the ideas is to close O'Neill Pool. From a maintenance perspective, it's a 40-year-old pool. And it's struggling. It has a lot of maintenance issues. It's hard for us to maintain. But on the other hand, it's located in an area that needs to have a thing for kids to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's an area that needs a place for – I mean, we've come
a
lot of –
Is it a well-attended pool?
It's not as well-attended as Holiday, but it's not far from it. It's about a 60-40 in terms of attendance. So 40% of our people who go to the pools go to – O'Neill, but it's one of the things that's talked about, but we're wondering about juvenile crime.
Yeah, even if you close down the pool, that just means, hey, we're not there anymore, we don't operate it. It's not like you have funds to then go destroy it either.
Right.
And bulldoze the land and sell it to somebody ready for construction.
Right. It's the middle of our park. It's a part of the community that really needs to have the pool. But from a maintenance perspective, it's got a short lifespan left.
Any ideas that you've heard that were positive so far on the budget cuts? And then I promise we'll go to news here. I know I'm running behind, but these are hot
questions.
I've
heard lots of different things. They all have some merit, and we can talk good and bad. It's going to hurt. I mean, any cut's going to hurt what the city provides. Especially with Park and Rec, we take such pride in what we're doing and what we're offering. It hurts us when we can't do our products as well as we should. And that's painful to say, even.
That was Bloomington Parks and Recreation Director Jay Tetzloff. Illinois Comptroller Leslie Munger visited Bloomington Normal this week as part of a statewide tour of social service providers who are waiting on state money. Munger was explaining why they aren't getting paid as she talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds this week.
Is this your apology tour?
My apology tour?
Well, because these services are not getting the money, or they're anticipating being broke in a few months if they don't get money from the powers that be down in Springfield. I was just wondering if maybe you were saying, yeah, I'm sorry, we're working on this, you know, the apology tour.
Well, I am apologizing on behalf of the state for our just poor management of the whole process. Really, my purpose of going out on this, I was in Quad Cities, Peoria, Quincy yesterday. Today, in addition to coming to Bloomington, I'll be in East St. Louis and Springfield. And my purpose is to help raise awareness about the impact of going forward with no budget. There have been a lot of court orders now where we're paying various groups of people via the courts with no budget, but the people that are in the organizations that are falling between the cracks that are still hurt by no budget are all these nonprofits that really rely heavily on help from our state, and they're the ones who serve our most vulnerable citizens. And so I really am trying to go out and use the megaphone, so to speak, that comes with the comptroller's office to let people know that we've got to get a budget in place. It's not a way to run a state. We are ceding our responsibility to govern to the court.
Well, what are you saying to the people? We just had a story yesterday, United Way, and the services that are part of the United Way. A lot of them are cutting back because they're worried about not getting money. They're going into their own coffers to keep things operating. And some say, if you don't have something done in 3 months, they're shutting down. These people are concerned. What are you telling them other than, we're trying to get things done?
Well, I tell them all those things, that we are working hard, that I continue to speak out for the need for a budget. You may know that I actually have a background in being a volunteer and a board of directors member for a nonprofit serving developmentally disabled adults in my hometown of Lincolnshire. And I understand exactly what they're going through and how hard it is. They can't plan. They can't budget. They don't know what to do. And so I think it's clear that we need a long-term comprehensive approach at how we fund and take care of our most vulnerable citizens in our state. And actually, once we get through this next couple months and hopefully get a budget in place, I'm going to lead an effort to really take a comprehensive approach and try and come up with a plan for how to do that. But right now, we just need to get a budget. You know, interesting little fact, and I shared this with people yesterday, is why it's so important we have a balanced budget. Right now in the state, we have just a little over $4 billion still in unpaid bills from fiscal 15. In the last fiscal year, we spent about $57 million in late fees because we don't pay our bills on time in our state. It's just like if you or I overran our credit card, didn't pay the interest, the bill, and then we have a late penalty, $57 million. Imagine what that money could do to help all these organizations who are operating now hand to mouth going forward with no budget. And yet, instead, we've wasted those tax dollars on late fees because we can't manage our finances. Mm. And this is why we need a balanced budget.
Comptroller, talk about the kinds of agencies in the state, and if you can, specifically Bloomington Normal, that will be and already are affected.
Well, yesterday I was in a number of organizations, and actually even throughout the past month, visiting a lot who serve developmentally disabled adults, people with intellectual disabilities, mental illness, Those are the ones that we really, I think, are the worst in the country with respect to funding and serving those people. Today, I'll be at Babyfold, and I imagine a lot of these, they're all in similar circumstances where they're really providing services at a much lower cost per person served than it would be if the state were running all this, and a much higher quality of care. But they do require some service from the state, some help with funding, and they're having a hard time continuing when the state is so far behind in getting a budget together. They cannot plan. So I'm trying to really, as I go around and talk to them, try and understand what their situation is, if we can help them, perhaps help them with, you know, just getting them connected to people who might be able to help them through with credit, lines of credit, et cetera, things we might be able to do in the future.
So you're urging people to put pressure on lawmakers, especially those who are served by these agencies or work for these agencies.
Yes, I am urging people to call their legislators. Tell them we cannot manage our state via court order. We must get a budget in place because there are groups, and the groups that serve the most vulnerable in our state are the ones that fall between the cracks. They are the face of this budget impasse. They are the ones not getting funded, and they are the ones that most need our help. And frankly, we should be spending our tax dollars on critical services in our state and not on late payment fees because we can't get a balanced budget in place.
That was Illinois Comptroller Leslie Munger with Scott and Colleen. We've heard plenty from the two major party candidates in the special election for the 18th congressional district seat that Aaron Schock is vacating, but not so much from the write-in candidate. Connor Vlachancic of Aurora is an independent. He's asking voters to write his name on the ballot on September 10th. And he talked with WJBC's Terry James this week.
We have a Republican candidate, Darren LaHood. We have a Democratic candidate, Rob Mellon.
Right.
Why do you feel the need for there to be a third candidate?
The answer to that covers 25 years of my experience on Capitol Hill. After I was born in Aurora and raised in DeKalb County, second cousin to an ear of corn, I was a technologist, went to California, Silicon Valley, and there was a particular election in 1994 where following the GOP revolution, which, by the way, the GOP revolution was wrapped around this contract with America. I actually wrote the original contract with America and gave it to Newt Gingrich in his office in Norcross, Georgia, on 14th of August, 1994.
How did you get access to Newt Gingrich's office to do that?
Excellent question. The company I worked for in Silicon Valley had its headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia, and Norcross, Georgia is right next door. So I wrote the letter wanting to meet him and sent it to the Georgia office, to the Atlanta office, to mail to him. He thought I was a constituent. He invited me to his office. He says, come on, tell me your plan.
So why don't you get the credit for it?
That's politics as usual. Is literally, we were there in his conference room in Norcross, Georgia, and I explained the contract with America that was a plan for the President of the United States to create a cabal of all freshman congressmen coming to Washington, D.C., on the strength of the voters saying, go make a difference. But in the good old boy structure of Congress at the time, and it still exists, having a relationship with the President of the United States would give them some power and authority. Gingrich literally jumped out of his chair, ran around the table, and said, that's the greatest idea I've ever heard. Next year I want to be Speaker of the House, and I'm going to steal your idea and use it for the GOP. Do you have any other great ideas I could steal? The answer to your question is, he pissed me off. The next year, 1995, when the Democrat congressman from the 15th Congressional District, Norm Mineta, who had previously been mayor of San Jose, resigned saying, it's no fun if you don't have your hand on the money throttle. So he quit, and a California senator came down from his district and said, I'm going to take over, et cetera, et cetera. That pissed me off. That election, September 1995, was the first election of the Reform Party that we had just achieved recognition by California Secretary of State. For whatever it's worth, I wrote the original contract with America, and I was the very first Reform Party candidate in the history of the universe. It's been a journey since then. Multiple times a candidate for Congress in California. I have never been elected, but I have never been defeated.
All right. Well, you're going to run as a write-in. Why aren't you on the ballot?
To be on the ballot required many months ago gathering 16,000 signatures from registered voters. The anger at the time was so great that we tried to get signatures, and it was just disdain for the whole thing. It was just no way, shape, or form you could do it short of what they did in Americans Elect was an outfit in 2012 that spent $55 million to gather signatures to qualify a candidate, presidential candidate in 2012. Yeah, could have done that, but that's just another flavor of politics as usual. I figured that on September 10th, as a write-in candidate, I would be the essence of none of the above for all the voters, and I've gone all over the 18th district, every county seat, talking to voters, talking to people that don't vote because they are so upset with politics as usual. They don't vote to show their disdain. And I tell them, they think you're invisible. You need to have on the ballot a way to say, I'm really angry, none of the above, no politics as usual. My name, write my name on your ballot, and you are saying, I am angry. I'm an angry voter. I'm an angry citizen. My life is nothing but troubles. I'm pissed off with Springfield. I'm pissed off with Chicago. I'm pissed off with Barack Obama.
So you don't like Barack Obama?
Did I imply that?
Just by the tone of your voice.
I had hoped that there was going to be some difference 8 years ago, 7 years ago, that maybe some kind of new form of the Camelot thing that was all around Jack Kennedy. And I didn't believe it, but I wanted to hope for it. But I was afraid that Barack Obama would actually literally destroy the country in ways that it hadn't been destroyed yet. And he's been a nightmare for us. And I remember, and you do too, there was 8 years ago, the anybody but Hillary. I think they would have said anybody but Hillary or Barack Obama.
That was congressional write-in candidate Connor Vlachonchik with Terry James. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Just last week, Bloomington's Chris Hyland got the call of his dreams. The former Central Catholic saint and two-time All-American long snapper on the Illinois State football team was given his chance to play in the NFL. He's in New Orleans Saints training camp in West Virginia, competing for a spot on the 53-man roster. And he took time to talk with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds this week.
All right, Chris, take us back to the day you learned you were a saint. How'd that come about?
It was a very crazy day. I going even back to the draft process, I had a couple offers to go to some rookie mini camps. I was with the Houston Texans for a week, and then I was with the New Orleans Saints for a week after that. And Then was lucky enough to get back to their veteran mini camp, but all of this was kind of on a tryout basis. So last week on Monday, I didn't know that I was going to be a part of an NFL training camp, and they were starting on Wednesday. So I didn't think anything was going to come my way until maybe later in the preseason or even the regular season. And then got a call from my agent. Actually, got a text from my agent because I missed his phone call, and it was seemed rather urgent. He texted me, said, "Where are you? What are you doing? You need to go get ready. Call me." So I called him immediately, and he told me that the Saints were going to offer me a rookie contract. And less than 24 hours later, I was on a plane headed to White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah, and you said where? White Sulphur
Springs.
Yeah, well,
I knew. Being in the rookie mini camp and the veteran mini camp, I knew that they had their training camp at the Greenbrier last year, and that they were going to have it again this year. And it's a fantastic place. It took me three connections to get from Bloomington to White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah.
I had to go through. I can't even remember where I went through. I think I went through Dallas, and then. Went through Washington, D.C., and then landed here. But it was a long travel day, but well worth it once I got here.
Chris, this is Colleen Reynolds, and I just want to say, I think on behalf of everybody here at WJBC, we're very proud of you and very excited for you, and just are happy to claim a little piece of you because you did contribute some great time on the air while you were an intern with us. And I want you to take me now to your first day and meeting the other, you know, players that maybe you'd spent some time with before, but really walk us through what that was like.
It was kind of strange because, you know, all of them came back from New Orleans or, you know, wherever they were at. And, I was just coming straight from Bloomington and one of the last guys to be on the roster. And, but it was great. I had met a lot of the specialists at our mini camps, and so it wasn't too different, you know. And that's kind of the thing that people have asked me a lot, you know, what's it like? And my response has kind of always been the same, you know. Football is just football. The field's 100 yards long, and you know the ball that you snap is the same type of ball you've snapped for years. So it wasn't too different. Obviously, things are a little bit heightened when you talk about the NFL and. You know, there's more people at every practice and, you know, more responsibility. But it's still football, and I'm just happy to be here and trying to make the most of an opportunity.
So there's no guarantees, and I only know about this from what I saw on Hard Knocks on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
There are no guarantees, but you signed a 3-year deal, is that right?
That's correct.
So yeah, how does that work? I don't understand that.
Well, that's just typical of a rookie contract. It is a 3-year deal. So yes, I do have a 3-year contract, but you know, there's 90 guys in training camp, and they have to cut the roster to 53 by the time opening week rolls around. So there will be a number of guys here that you won't see on the opening day roster for the New Orleans Saints, but. You know, that's something I don't really focus on every day. I just try and go out and do my job, do my part to make the team better right now. Focus on getting myself better to be in a position to hopefully make the team when week one comes.
How many long snappers in camp right now?
There's a couple of us here, but you know, they do a great job of preparing every single one of us and, you know, giving each of us a great opportunity to make the most of our chances here, and you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I don't focus on who else is here or, you know, what the other guy does during practice. I just make sure that I do the best that I can.
So you said here just a second ago, you just work on getting better. Well, you're one of the best long snappers in the country. Mm-hmm. So what else are you working on? Where do you think you need to get better?
Well, there's little things here and there that I always try and improve on, and there's even things, you know, we had John Carney down here who was a great NFL professional for a number of years. I think he played 20 plus years as a kicker, and there are even things that when he's talking to the kickers and punters and the long snappers that you wouldn't think of every day that he says, you know, think about this or do something different here. So there's always different things that you can tweak, whether it's with your snap, whether it's with a pre-snap read, reading the defense, you know, whether it's your follow-through or your protection. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've tried to work on while I've been down here is, you know, coming from a different style of punt formation where I don't have as many blocking responsibilities as I did in college. I didn't have very many blocking responsibilities in college is how I should say it. And then coming here, you have blocking responsibilities on every single punt. So that's probably the biggest difference, I would say. But there are always things to improve on. And just every single day you go out there and try and improve on one of those things. And at the end of the practice, at the end of the day, at the end of the week, and then, you know, at the end of the preseason, hopefully you have improved on enough that that you can find a way onto a roster.
That was former Central Catholic Saint and current New Orleans Saint Chris Hyland with Scott and Colleen. Another former Redbird looking to make the cut in the NFL is receiver Cameron Meredith, who was in the Chicago Bears camp where WJBC's Adam Stasinski found him this week.
Between signing and first week of training camp here, how have things been going for you?
Things have been going pretty good. So it's a lot of learning. It's been a huge jump in, you know, the amount of talent level, but I mean, you know, I've been getting used to it and, you know, just learning on the fly and trying to make the most out of every rep.
What are some of the biggest differences you've noticed between college and the NFL so far?
Everybody's good. There are no, you know, mediocre guys out here. Everybody's good. That's or else we wouldn't be here. So, you know, the level of competition is pretty high every single day. So, you know, there really aren't any too many off plays. So you have to be on your game every play.
As far as being on your game, you know, what are some of the things that you can do to help yourself stand out here as you try to make that final roster?
I mean, it's hard, you know, kind of let go of those bad plays, but, I mean, the next play mentality is probably the best thing that could help you because, you know, no matter what kind of play you have, a touchdown or a drop pass, you have to go back, and that next play is the thing that matters most. So I think just focusing on that and trying to make the most out of that rep that's in the present and just, you know, focusing on that will help you out in the long run.
As you mentioned, everyone here is good. You know, they're all pros at this point. What's it like being on the field with some of these guys? And, you know, I know in particular, I haven't seen you work with Jay Cutler all that much, but, you know, what's it like being on the field with some of these guys that have established themselves so well in this league?
It's been great. They have a lot to teach, and, you know, they have great words of advice, and I take heed to everything they say. So it's been really good to see how they, you know, they've grown and, you know, how they've become the player that they have been, you know, being so long in the league. And my first year, you know, they let me know that it's going to be a long road, but no matter how much, you know, it's going to be hard. So I'm just trying to, you know, take advice from them and, you know, so go from there.
I heard Jay Cutler mention yesterday how difficult this offensive system is to learn. So what's it been like trying to learn this system, especially you being a rookie? I mean, he's a, you know, an established pro, and he said it's tough to learn.
Yeah, I mean, you just learn on the fly, honestly. You have to just be on your game. Just a lot of time at night spending with your playbook, and, you know, those mental reps really do count because you don't get too many in practice. So, you know, paying attention to that, and then also, you know, just focusing in and, you know, watching everybody else and see how they're doing that play that you might have next, and, you know, just see what little things they might have for you.
You know, I asked you earlier, what's it like being the difference between college and the NFL? So now, what's the differences you've noticed between a college playbook you had at ISU and now this NFL playbook?
It's a little bit thicker, I'd say. But, I mean, there's a lot of concepts and schemes and stuff like that to attack defense. And, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing as just football. But the terminology and the lingo is kind of different. So, I mean, there's a lot more plays and, you know, it just takes time. It takes those reps. Those reps really do help you learn and, you know, just taking advantage of it.
Where have they had you working in this system, you know, inside slot, outside? Where have they been working you so far?
Mainly outside, you know, the X and Z. But we do, you know, changed it up a little bit, and we have outside guys on the inside. So I've been all over the place. It's been fun to, you know, work on my game from different spots on the field and, you know, hone in on my craft.
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about ISU. I don't know if you saw yesterday, picked second in the FCS coaches poll. It's not surprising to anyone. What are you expecting to see from them this year? I see a big smile on your face when I mention them. What are you expecting out of them this year?
I mean, I think they're going to have a great turnaround next year, and, you know, hopefully they can get right back to that national championship in Frisco. But some great talent out there, and they got great coaching staff, and, you know, the guys there want to win. So I don't see anything but good things in their future.
Let's talk about that great coaching staff. How did Coach Brock Speck and the rest of your coaches there, what kind of things they put in you that have helped you make the transition so far from college to the NFL?
Just that hard work mentality. You know, Coach Speck is big on toughness, and, you know, he's a hard, brutal, brute guy. And, you know, getting to the league, there's not going to be those people that baby you and, you know, here's do it this way and do it that way. So, you know, kind of the things, you just go on the flow or go, you know, with the flow. So Coach Speck and Coach Dick, and they really had some manly things to teach us about life and, you know, how to handle certain situations. So, I mean, a lot of things I learned there I carried over here, and it's really been helpful.
That was former Redbird and current Chicago Bear Cameron Emeritus with Adam Stasinski. A voice from WJBC's past, Tommy Hodson, worked with some of WJBC's legendary voices, Art Kimball and Dick Ludke, to name a few, after a brief but successful stint as Bloomington High School's boys basketball coach. He talked with WJBC's Dan Swaney about that this week in our Throwback Thursday interview.
We have to start everything with your first varsity basketball team in 74 and 75 at Bloomington High School. That team has to go down with one of the best teams ever to play basketball in this town.
I think, Dan, maybe they advanced farther than any team that Bloomington has had for a long time. They got to the final eight teams, and of course we had just the two divisions in, Class A and Double A, and we got beaten our first game at the state tournament by East St. Louis, and I probably made some blunders in that game, or we would have probably won it because we closed the gap to about 3 points and then maybe lost by six or eight.
Yeah, it was a big deal to go to the Assembly Hall and play the tournament, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's quite a scare.
Yeah?
Because when those high school kids walk in there, you know, you go in the corner to shoot a shot and it looks like you're dialing away from Mount Jumbo.
I'll be darned. Well, give us the starting combination that you had for that team, and get ready, folks, to write these down. These are some of the best players ever to walk on the hardwood here.
Well, let's see.
Your guards?
We played a three-guard offense, and that includes Bob Bender, Chuck Owen, Dave Pavlik, and then underneath we had Steve Jordan, who always got the toughest defensive assignment. And as a junior, Joe Galvin played with them.
So you had a 7-footer. You had a basketball player that would eventually go on to win two national championships with two different teams.
Uh-huh.
That's a great place to build around, isn't it?
And I probably had and coached the best athlete, three-sport athlete, at Bloomington, and that was Chuck Owen. He played in the North-South All-Star game as a starting quarterback. He played in the North-South All-Star baseball game at first base. And I think in that final game against East St. Louis, he scored like 20-some points.
Yeah, and those are the kids that kind of, I don't want to say flew under the radar, but certainly the spotlight was on Bob Bender and Joe Galvin. By many people, they just look around and say, these guys are the real deal. They're good players.
Well, you know what makes a good coach, don't you? Great players, and they were.
Absolutely. Do you keep in touch with any of those players? Do they ring you up from time to time?
Once in a while, and if I get back to Bloomington, they always seem to get things together. Also on that team as a junior was Horacio Cuerco, and he kind of rounds them up for me. And another good player I had that filled in was Corny Gant.
And, you know, I always loved doing games when Corny Gant was playing. I don't know why. He was just a guy that seemed to fly around everywhere and just go in. And he was hard-nosed about the way he played.
You had to have a guy like that.
Everybody had to have that. You had a lot of good players, though, in the 5 years that were just really good athletes, too, didn't you? And in particular, I'm talking about the Dunstons and Doty and Dana Dunson. And you were lucky to have them. And I'm going to bring up the story about the Danville game here. But talk a little bit about some of the other kids you had in the 5 years you were there.
Well, like you said, Doty and Dana, they were fun to watch and playing with them. Tom Schroeder was on a team with them, and Mike Pavlik, the younger brother of Dave, Chris Jones, Alvin Nathan, Ralph Hamilton, Scott Hardema, and a kid to come in from McLean County from a small school called Rick Huffington.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his mom and dad got killed in a plane crash, and he come in to live with his sister who was married here in Bloomington and happened to be in our district till Rick played for us.
I'll be darned. Ralph Hamilton, I haven't thought about him, but I was always, he was one of those kids when they came out on the floor, I was intimidated even as a broadcaster because he was just so big.
People didn't realize how huge he was, but Ralph was left-handed, and he was a great, great baseline shooter.
It's a good player.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, only 5 years. It seems like you were there longer than that. You transitioned out of your high school coaching to come right into radio, and Art Kimball brought you into our radio station here. If you're going to learn from somebody, Tommy, you couldn't have picked a better person to learn under than Art Kimball.
Yeah, he could call a game, and it was very, very smooth. And I don't know whether I helped him that much because he didn't give me that much time to talk, but that's okay. I was learning by him, you know, and that made then paved the road, and then of course you people at WJBC got the best.
Well, you know, it's I've said this every time anybody will ask. They said, can't anybody just come in and do color? I said, the color is the hardest part to do of the game.
Yeah,
because you don't know when you should start talking and when you should shut up, and unless you've worked with somebody for a while and get that kind of rhythm going. That's a hard job to do.
I had that great rhythm with Dick Lutke.
Talk about
because
Dick.
I knew.
Yeah.
He knew, and I knew when he needed a break.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just fill in then and say some things then. But Dick is, I guess he's the best. There's no doubt about it in my mind because WJBC has a diamond in the rough there.
That was former coach and WJBC sportscaster Tommy Hudson with Dan Swaney in our Throwback Thursday interview. The Weekend News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. The Mitsubishi Motors Task Force met for the first time this week. The committee consists of Bloomington and Normal officials and state and federal lawmakers, as well as the governor and lieutenant governor. Mitsubishi spokesman Dan Irvin says a marketing firm could be brought in to help find a buyer for the plant.
The primary objective is to bring an existing automaker in to run the facility, continue the employment, perhaps grow the employment.
Economic Development Council CEO Kyle Hamm has been named chairman of the task force. Illinois State's All-American running back Marshawn Coppridge says he wants to focus solely on football now and not on the arrest that sidelined him briefly in April. WJBC's Joe Ragusa says Coppridge didn't say much to the media on Wednesday.
Coppridge did repeat this statement.
I made a mistake. I have learned from it, and I'm ready to move forward.
Again?
I made a mistake. I have learned from it, and I'm ready to move forward.
And again?
I made a mistake. I have learned from it, and I'm ready to move forward.
And once more?
I made a mistake. I learned from it, and I'm ready to move forward.
Head coach Brock Spack says Coppridge did not receive any special treatment when his suspension was rescinded after he pleaded guilty to selling marijuana in May.
I don't see that. Not in this scenario. There isn't a coach in, that I know that would handle this any different than I did with the information I had. See, I have a lot more information than you do. So that's why I say that statement is not correct.
Spack says Coppridge's scholarship has been reduced, but he didn't say by how much. Joe Ragusa, WJBC and WJBC.com.
Normal's Town Council has approved a land trade with Illinois State University that will allow 608 South Main Street to become the new fire station headquarters. WJBC's Adam Stasinski has that.
Part of the deal involves giving up the property where Fire Station 2 sits on the west side. Fire Chief Mike Humer says the department will still have plenty of access to that side of town.
We have good access going to the west down Hovey Avenue, College Avenue. Those are main thoroughfares or roads, you know, which we can get road speed, you know, up to about 40 miles an hour with a piece of fire apparatus on those streets.
Humer says a major plus of the location is its close proximity to ISU's campus, which is where most of their calls come from. Construction on the new station likely will not begin until next year. Adam Stasinski, WJBC and WJBC.com.
Illinois lawmakers have voted to forego a roughly $1,400 pay raise. The Senate approved the plan this week. Governor Rauner has said he'll sign the measure, while Rauner says raising income taxes alone isn't the preferred solution to avoid a credit downgrade for the state.
The downgrade is a direct result of the financial mismanagement and the impasse. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get something done that there'll be more of that. It's highly appropriate. That's just an indication of the lack of good financial management, the lack of structural reform.
Standard & Poor's and Fitch Ratings have already downgraded the rating for one state-supported corporation, the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, due to complications from the budget impasse. A report shows former Congressman Aaron Schock has continued to spend campaign money since resigning from Congress earlier this year. WJBC's Andy Dane has more.
According to the report from the Federal Election Commission, Schock's Generation Y Fund has received contributions from nearly 50 people between January and June of this year. At least three of those contributors were Illinois businessmen who received $5,000 refunds. The report also shows the fund transferred more than $22,000 to Schock for Congress that went to renting a five-star hotel in Aspen, Colorado in May. Schock is currently under federal investigation. Andy Dane, WJBC, and WJBC.com.
Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now to take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, Illinois State football will hold its annual media day as Coach Brock's back and the players preview the 2015 season. On Monday night, Bloomington's City Council will consider approving a scaled-back flamingo exhibit for Miller Park Zoo. On Wednesday, a bulk of Illinois State students will begin moving back into the dorms. Also, to signal the start of a new school year, the District 87 and Unit 5 school boards will hold their first meetings of the fall campaign. And on Saturday, the Stanley Cup is scheduled to make an appearance at Danvers Days, and Illinois State football will be holding its red-white scrimmage. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Starr.